Highways Voices, the podcast of Highways News, your one-stop destination for all the news about the highways and transport technology industries, and our must-read daily newsletter.
Welcome to this special Highways Voices podcast, where we discuss mobility of the future, and we discuss it in front of a live audience, which is what makes it special. I'm at the SWARCO User Group meeting in Coventry, and for the second year, our panel discussion here becomes your Highways Voices podcast, where we look at the issues facing the industry. Our panel consists of Emily Madsen, Lighting and ITS Manager at Staffordshire County Council, Sean Ballmer, Transport Systems Assistant Engineer at City of York Council, Paula Clayton-Smith, CEO of the Local Council Roads Innovation Group Elcrig, and John Pickworth, Managing Director of SWARCO UK and Ireland. Now, last year, we talked about the current challenges facing the industry around equipment obsolescence, staff recruitment and retention, active travel, environmental issues, public and private sector collaboration, and budgeting, funding and procurement. You can still find that discussion, which also featured Emily, Sean and John, on the Highways News website. This year, we're being a bit more forward-thinking, discussing mobility of the future. So let's start by asking Emily and first Sean. That's kind of the exam question we've been set for today, but how much of your working time can you actually spend thinking about the future, and how much of it is kind of here and now of today?
Currently, at the moment, not a lot. Like I mentioned last year, resources is a big issue. We were planning on hiring more people. That hasn't happened. So there's two people in our engineering team, me and someone else. So a lot of our time is firefighting, fixing day-to-day problems, maybe some signal timings, but it's hard to look into the future when you don't have time.
I echo exactly what Sean says, not a lot at all. So coming to events like this helps me think about the future, but then when I get back to work, it's all very reactive. I'm not thinking about what's happening in the future at all. It's more, if we had more resources, again, like what Sean was saying, I think we'd be a bit more proactive with things.
Now, this obviously brings us away from where we'd like things to be to actually looking at where we actually are. So, Paula, your job as head of Elcrig, Local Council Roads Innovation Group, with the emphasis on innovation, what do you feel and what's your reaction when you hear comments like that, and where does Elcrig fit into the bigger picture of looking at future mobility?
Well, as many people will know in the industry, I would say that not just Elcrig, but my DNA is very sort of local government. So it saddens me that in order to prepare our communities for the future, we don't give enough time in local government for our officers, heads of service, etc., to start planning for the future. And I think certainly something I've noticed at Elcrig, that we get lots of sort of requests through our regional groups, through conversations with Emily and others, is that they are desperate for that sort of space to allow to plan for the future. So we're doing as much as we can to, you know, to try and do that sort of for them. But that isn't going to solve the sort of the lack of resource that, you know, people feel back at home base. But it's a massive challenge, and one I do worry about for the sector, really.
And how about you, John, from the private sector viewpoint of you're coming up with hard work on solutions, but how easy is it to actually get the bandwidth with people to talk to them about it?
Yeah, it's difficult, as the guys have just said. You know, it's where you put your focus. I guess where we try and put it is, if we can create solutions and systems that take some of the pain away, then that's going to make it easier to be able to look at the innovations. But I guess the very base for us is to get the core working. So the very basics of whether it be maintenance, whether it be general support to the authorities, has to be right. And then we can start to build on it. But again, it has to be in a very measured and controlled way. Even with the investments and various things coming in, we have to recognise that every great idea that might be on the table has an implication in terms of being able to support that in the future. So making sure we're thinking about that and not just trying to push things down people's throats is really important, I think, to make sure we're moving the right way. right direction.
And it's one of those things where any event you go to, everyone's talking about data. Data's the new oil, data's new gold. It's this fantastic resource. But actually, data is nothing until it's interpreted and turned into information. And lots of authorities are probably sitting on some fantastic stuff that they're not actually using.
So we talked about this earlier in the day here at the user group, that it's how you use that data, how you present that data. Is it presented in a way that enables decisions to be made? And the danger is huge amounts of data are collected, but with no actual mechanism of being able to do anything with it. You hear the other buzzword around data is AI at the moment. So huge amounts of discussion around AI, the things that ChatGPT or other things can do with this data. But that's kind of a bit of a wake-up call for us, because that does show you just the power of you, if you get it right, being able to display your data, being able to use it in ways to enable really some quite clever things to be done. So I think we need to work together with the authorities to see how we can maximise that to improve the efficiencies.
And let's come back to our authorities that have joined us here on the panel. How much are you able to do you in using the power of data that you have, and how much does that actually influence the travelling public?
We have lots of data across our highways department, which I don't actually know how much data we've got. I think that's the key problem, is there's lots of data being collected, but we don't know actually what is being collected. And it's only from conversations I've had at getting a cup of tea, like, oh, I'm doing data, what have you got? And, you know, it's collaborating with internally, it's not just externally, it's internally as well. But yeah, we need to be able to collate that and put it into a system like MyCity, like you were saying, John. And that will then reduce having that, we'll be able to impact the network more efficiently. And that will then be able to reduce like resource needs and stuff. So yeah, just exactly echo what you just said, John.
Yeah, I obviously harp on about STEP quite a bit. We use it a lot in York. We have every bit of data from our signals controllers for the last 2.5-3 years. We can investigate that. We've obviously got our real-time model we can use. We have a lot of data just in the transport team. That's the problem. It's still very hard to output our data into the open data platform and the business incentive team. It's hard to transfer data between silos in our council, let alone across borders.
Yeah, 20-odd years ago, I was involved in what was Highways Agency project called the Travel Information Highway. We were coming up with this way of machine-to-machine traveller information being shared between authorities, between Highways Agency and the local roads, etc., etc. It wasn't just going to be traffic, it was going to be public transport as well. And 20 years later, you still go to events where people are talking about this as though it's a new idea. I guess, Paula, from Elkrig's point of view, how do you find it when you talk to different authorities? You know, we do not have a level playing field across the country, do we?
Absolutely not. And to give an example, there's one authority I spoke to who says they've literally got 20 or 30 different systems, each holding different sets of data, not communicating. And I think now that we're in a much more complex environment, the fact that we don't have as many people in our teams, you know, everyone I talk to talks about, you know, their workforce perhaps not being there in the next 5 years, retirement or whatever. So actually having an integrated system that allows you to make complex decisions drawing in different data becomes ever more important, really. And it becomes even harder, you know, if you're a large authority or a small authority, what sort of background that is. And also something that we know happens in local government is where politicians will often focus on the short-term elements, which means that drives your data to be very short-termism, as opposed to sort of planning for the long-term future, really.
And let's actually think about the fact that we can talk about future of mobility, but part of it is the fact that, as we've discovered, simply fixing existing product that we have out on our highways, so the traffic signals obsolescence fund and the earlier money that was spent on fixing existing traffic signals to make the roads run more smoothly. How much should we, when we're looking at future mobility, just fix present mobility before we get ahead of ourselves?
Well, I think that is an underestimated impact that I would say national politicians tend not to think about. If every local authority has that funding to be able to make changes and tune things up, as the ministers like to talk about, that will have a massive impact on our sort of networks across the whole of the country, really.
And so, Sean, you've got some money for traffic signals obsolescence from the money out of the plan for drivers. How are you using the extra money that's coming in?
So, yeah, we got some from the GLF side of the fund. We are planning on upgrading a lot of our detection to above ground. We've started that as ourselves, but it's going to be AI detection, so we'll be able to identify pedestrians, cyclists, and motor vehicle classifications. On that as well, we're going to get 98% of our signal junctions and pedestrian crossings onto IP comms. We're close at the moment, but this will just help us push that last bit. And we are going to improve controllers and timings as part of the GLF as well. Part of the fund was to just help with fixing just timings that may be not set for 20 years. So, yeah, we're going to use the fund for all that.
I think that's key, but for anybody, it's only a start. The reality is that any form of funding has to have an element of continuity to it. So we got, a couple of years ago, there was 15 million put into the industry, which barely scratched the surface of some of the obsolescence, and we actually still went backwards from then to where we are today. And even where they have got big funding, in Sean's case, for example, you'll still have a whole load of obsolescence issues off the back of this. So I think the key message from our point of view is, from, you know, we maintain signals and so on all over the network, is there's a far long way to go, so it has to be staged. But at the same time, you can't stop the innovation part of it at the same time. So it's a real, sometimes it can be seen as, you know, you have to do one before you do the other, but actually the enablement of some of the systems things we talked about can actually help some of the obsolescence issues, potentially by even removing some of that that infrastructure by the side of the road. So it's a staged process.
I spoke last year about the fact that we had a failing site that failed. From that, we now have a asset renewal program in York, and it comes out of the capital fund, and that's ongoing. This year, we're hoping to do 4 junctions and 3 crossings. Obviously, that changes depending on road space, etc. But we need to push forward that obsolescence is happening at the controllers, even though we upgraded them 5-6 years ago. They're going to need doing again shortly in the next 5-10 years. So it's continuous. We need to keep funding this.
How are we going to get over this issue that has been an issue in as long as I've been involved in the industry for the last 25 years?
It's to show a need. Like I said, failing sites cause issues, cause money problems to the cities and counties. Sometimes something has to fail before anyone will take any notice.
I'd just like to pick up, there's something that I found when I did my dissertation for my Masters, that they've got in America where it's like a scoring card, and they look at all the different authorities and what assets they've got and what condition they're in. I think that would be really good if we had that in the UK, because you'd be able to see, you know, what authorities have got the worst performing sites. I think that's, to be able to grant the funding, I think that's where we need to be going, is looking at the priority of where the failing sites are, and the obsolete equipment as well.
One of the things that Darren Capes from the Department for Transport has kept saying is the importance of giving the evidence of the value of this so that he can go back to his paymasters and justify more money coming into the industry in the future. So again, is that something that between you is a thing that you're constantly doing. You're constantly evaluating what works and what doesn't and building business cases yourself. And is there a best practice we can learn from across the industry?
I think that in the ITMF, for example, there's a big emphasis on before and after study and making sure we can demonstrate that. I think it should also speak for itself, though, in terms of performance of the network and some of the almost standard data around journey times, around this sort of thing. When you see big problems, it's often because a traffic light is out or because there's some infrastructure problem, and that can have quite a significant economic impact. So if we're measuring, we're getting the data we were talking about earlier, and we're creating the dashboards and we're gaining that, then we should automatically really be able to see the impact of the works we're doing on the performance of the network, which is actually the key outcome we're looking for.
And I think what I would say from a national perspective is that for the first time in a very long time, DFT, probably about a month, 6 weeks ago, invited key players to a round table because we're about to hit the next sort of treasury spending review, notwithstanding all of the interesting challenges in the political environment at the moment. But one of the interesting things from DFT is that they were reaching out, and as opposed to going to the normal suspects, they're actually saying, if you've got evidence that allows us to show to Treasury, because just like you guys when you're going to Cabinet or whatever, if you can show us the evidence, and again, that's partly how we went from 21 million to 70 million, we really, really need that, either both at Elkrig and DFT, because it just makes it so much easier to make it, you know, I hate the expression no-brainer, but it literally makes it so much easier. So anything that you guys got of an industry that allows Elkrig or DFT to prove that this is a really efficient way of improving our networks, whether that's council or supplier, it's absolutely critical.
I'd like to add, it's not just evidencing from a DFT point of view. I think we have to evidence internally as well. So, you know, within a local authority, you've got other competing pressures. So like from a highways perspective, you've got potholes, but then from a wider organisation, it's more like social care and stuff like that. So that's a big thing for me, like having to evidence internally, you know, why is it better fixing a traffic light to saving a child's life, you know?
Yeah, and it's very, very difficult to justify that, but otherwise your carers who are travelling from one place to another all day are taking twice as long to get between appointments and doing less caring. And so, you know, an efficient transport network isn't just a thing in itself. It's vital for everything else that goes on. But I think part of what I come across, and one of the reasons I've brought you two up, is because you're not like some of the local authority people I meet, and I hasten to add I haven't seen any of them in this room, but potentially that's because the sort of people that will come to a SWARCO user group meeting aren't the sort of people I'm now going to talk about, which is those that are extremely risk averse. They have a job description, they have something they do, and they don't want to try and innovate. They don't want to do something different because no one is telling them they must go out and find the new latest solutions. They are happy to keep their head below the parapet. How are we going to encourage a bit more risk-taking, a bit more innovation among local authorities where there is a genuine fear that if I try something different and it goes wrong, I'm going to get told off or I could potentially be disciplined and lose my job for it?
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. I was involved with a few Live Labs projects a couple of years ago. One failed and one was quite successful. And if we were to have done that with our own money, then I don't think the members would have been particularly happy. And I suppose it's because of that public perception, isn't it? You don't want to be spending public money on something that's going to fail. So yeah, I do think that authorities need to be a bit more risk averse. How do we do that? I have no idea.
Is this, John, where you as a private company with solutions have to come with absolute rock solid business cases?
Yeah, to be clear, our solutions are what we come up with Emily, with Sean and this. They're not things we come up independently. They're, you know, we look at the problems and we try and build those together. And I think the key is small step innovation. So
and not trying to pretend that we've got all the answers to something, and then when the failure hits, a surprise to everybody and it doesn't work. I think the openness and the opportunity is for us to try new things. We've talked about smart AI today, we've talked about InFlow, we've talked about various different adaptive solutions we're looking at to try and take things forward. Lots of those are part of the development phase. But you go in those and you say, okay, look what we can prove, look what we can demonstrate in doing this. And suddenly you've got some innovation. But if the first port of call is to say, no, we can't do that because there's too much risk of failure, then the industry isn't really going to move forward. So I think there's huge opportunity for new solutions, new innovations and so on, but they have to be done in a measured, controlled way. To get all the presentation on cybersecurity, all these little things, you have to make sure we're protecting the core.
And we talk about mobility of the future, and there's what people would like it to be and the real world, because I think one of the interesting things about the plan for drivers is it actually kind of potentially reluctantly, but it admitted that whatever happens with our transport network in the future, for a long time, because of the past, whether we like it or not, we're stuck with a lot of people travelling around in their own private vehicles and making that as efficient as possible.
Yeah, and all I'd say is, you know, it's great that we talk about these the future flying cars and the various different things, but we've just got to recognise the reality of the steps to go there. We can't talk about autonomous vehicles if we're driving around the roads of Derbyshire and we're hitting potholes every 5 minutes. It just doesn't work, you know. And so the whole ecosystem has to come together to make that work. So I think that's got to develop.
And Sean and Emily, I'm not expecting you to speak badly of anybody, but how difficult is it to actually deliver political solutions where you might get your members asking you things because they have a political reason for wanting to do something in a certain way and have a certain transport policy, but you've still got to keep the roads moving and people being able to get about in their daily life?
Got a good example of this, actually, that I'm just dealing with currently, with the priority change for pedestrians and cyclists. There's always these competing wants, aren't there, from members, that they'll put all these new policies in place, so this is the new priority. And we're quite rural, so we have realised that we are going to need the car. So we've got a couple of active travel schemes going on at the moment where they want everything on it. They want a priority for buses, they want a priority for peds and cyclists. It's like, you can't have everything, it's got to be one or the other. Or like talking about InFlow, I suppose you can do it for different times of days and stuff like that. But yeah, it's you need to speak to the members in a plain way, I suppose, just to make sure that they understand what the complexities of these are, because sometimes they just don't understand.
If you need somebody to speak in a plain way, talk to Emily Madsen. Sure, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, mirror Emily with everything. Similar situation. We have a very busy, large crossing junction. We need to give more time pedestrians. They've got plenty of time, but we'll do what you say and we'll see what happens. And basically, it's just evidence-based again. I've changed this to what you want me to change it to. It's caused these issues. Can I put it back? Thank you. And then that usually ends it. So.
And Paula, you're kind of my, when I'm writing articles on Highways News, if there's a particular local government story, you're kind of my go-to person to go and talk to. What would be your advice in your experience on how to actually handle that?
I guess for me, having had a foot in the local government camp, having actually stood in local elections and knowing what it's like when you've got the pressure of lots of people getting very, very angry at you and they don't care how long it takes, I think it's an incremental process of just helping elected members understand, as you were saying, Sean, the impact of things. but also understanding the impact that, that they're being faced with. I mean, a lot of elected members now are being faced in quite a violent sort of world. A lot of people behind keyboards and really getting quite agitated on single issue matters. So I think this is sometimes where actually elected members and officers can find a sort of an easy common ground and also be able to equip elected members with the, if you're faced with this argument, this is how simply you can feed it back to communities. I'm not saying that that is the sort of the silver bullet for everything, but I think there does have to be a lot more of a sort of a closer sort of understanding on both sides, and it is really incredibly challenging.
Yeah, agree again. It depends who you're speaking to, at what time, and what you can convey with them. Again, you have some people who are stuck in their ways, it's going to be like, and then you have people who work with you, which is great. It's all about personability and how you work.
And it's all the more reason why our elected member profile also needs to be reflective of the community that it's representing. You know, the age profile of political members, just like the age profile in local government, is ageing at a significant rate. So being able to get community groups involved that help, again, balance political views, I think is also an incredibly useful way of perhaps sometimes tempering that short-termism.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so let's just quickly wrap up. We've talked about mobility of the future, and I think we've talked about not so much your nuclear-powered space hoppers and other things that often come up in these conversations, but more the sort of practical solutions. Are our panel confident that actually the potential solutions that technology is bringing to make transport greener, efficient, safer, are we in a position to make the most of that? And if not, what needs to happen?
I'll just quickly take this. I think we are in a position to make the most of it, but with anything government related, it's small incremental steps. It'll take a while, but we'll get there. We'll get there in the end.
I think, yeah, we will get there. For us, though, as Staffordshire, I think we'll watch other people do it. This is quite controversial, but I don't think that we are the authority to lead on big innovative things like that. We're a rural county. Should some of the bigger players be doing it? And I probably agree that they should be. So yeah, we'll get there, but we'll let other people do it first.
Yeah, and I definitely support that. You know, we work with a lot of authorities and they're not all the same. You don't have all the same resources, you don't have the same routes and sources of funding necessarily. And we try very hard to have localised strategies and localised conversations on what you actually need, not trying to push you down a route that's not actually for you. These sorts of obsessions when we go through the things we've talked about today, looking at all our products and solutions and so on, we have to get the balance right between the hard work of what we want to do with a commercial business to actually win it for the long term with the authorities to try and create a strategy that works and actually takes places. So, yeah, it's just getting the balance right. But, yeah, of course we can get there. We're making progress all the time.
And I think finally for me, I think we can make the progress. The fact that it might be like a sliding deck of some sort of authorities moving faster than others, but I think that's normal, so I'm incredibly positive. And like Emily says, sometimes it's worthwhile just waiting to see what others do, and that's where, you know, private sector come in to help de-risk some of that.
That's Paula Clayton-Smith, CEO of the Local Council Roads Innovation Group. That's all we have time for on this Highways Voices, where we discuss the future of mobility with Paula and three other people, and the four of them really do know what they're talking about. So thanks again to Paula and to Emily Madsen, Lighting and ITS Manager at Staffordshire County Council, Sean Ballmer, Transport Systems Assistant Engineer at City of York Council, and John Pickworth, Managing Director of SWARCO UK and Ireland. And we'll be back next week expecting a chat with a former Transport Secretary. So join us again for more on Highways Voices.
Highways Voices. Join us again next week for more insights from those that matter in the industry.